evening, everybody, and welcome to Take Two Radio. This is Pam, your host, and tonight, of course, I have with me Dawn. How are you doing, Dawn?
I'm great. I hope you are, Pam.
I am, too, and I know you're super excited.
Yes, I am extremely excited over who our special guest is this evening. It's been a long time coming. We've missed him dearly.
Okay, well, go ahead and take it away. Introduce them. This was your invite.
ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome all of you to the show today. And we have a wonderful, wonderful guest with us. You know him as Josh Lewis from the CBS daytime drama Guiding Light. And we have severely missed him since the entire show has been off the air. And I'd like to bring on Robert Newman. Hello and welcome.
Hi, you got me all teary-eyed right there. That was really sweet. It's nice to be missed.
Believe me, you have been missed. We have missed Guiding Light and the whole Josh and Reva storyline, the Spaldings, the Lewises, I mean, you name it, the Bowers. Oh, my gosh. It's really good to hear your voice again, I must admit.
Well, I miss you, too, just so you know. I miss all the fans. I miss all the people who were so dedicated to that show for so many years. I run into people on the street all the time who actually get a little weepy with me from time to time and talk about how much, you know, what that show meant to them in their lives and how they're just so sad that they can't ever follow the lives of these characters anymore. It's sad.
How do you handle that when somebody comes up to you and they start crying?
Well, I try not to cry with them.
Okay.
You know, the general rule in soap opera is if one actor's crying, you shouldn't be crying too,
right?
Because only one should be crying at a time. But
sure,
you know, I just talk to them and tell them about, you know, usually tell them a story or two about, you know, something, some fun stuff that went on, or, you know, talk to them about the last day of shooting or something like that. And I thank them. Almost every single fan I talk to, I say this: thank you for helping put my kids through college.
Oh.
And believe me, we were very glad to put your kids through college and to keep you gainfully employed. I really do mean that. I started watching Guiding Light probably when I was in middle school, and that would have been in the 80s, and just followed it to the very end. And, you know, the time that I was the most entrenched in watching it was when, you know, Philip and Beth and Rick and Mindy were kind of one of the core storylines. And then, of course, the Josh and Reva,
sure,
the whole Lewis family storyline, those were the main fixtures to the show. And the Bauer storylines, it was just unbelievable, the writing that, you know, that came out of the Guiding Light and the stories that were created. I mean, you almost felt like you were part of the story. You were part of the family. And it was just so believable, and it was just so heart-wrenching. That was my favorite daytime drama. So I was just like, no, when they said you guys are going off air, I was like, this can't be. What in the world? You know, I mean, forever. You grew up with daytime, you know, with my grandmother, then my mother, and
right,
it was
right.
A very generational thing. And you never once in a million years thought that anything would ever replace daytime. You never thought any daytime drama would go off air. It just was unthinkable.
That's for sure.
And
yeah,
when it started to happen, it was like, wait a minute, this can't be. You know, what will people do who are accustomed to watching daytime drama? I mean, what will they do now? And of course,
I assume they're going
to
tune
really
into
exist.
A cooking show or a game show. Is that not right?
Heck no.
I think that's what the networks were sort of bargaining with, you know,
that's
what they were counting on.
I know, and some of them have already bit the dust. So,
yeah.
I know, two of my soaps on ABC, All My Children, One Life to Live, got canceled, and I have never watched not one second of what they replaced it with.
Well, I think that's probably true of a lot of people who watch their favorite soap opera give way to a talk show or whatever. I don't even know when we were canceled that the powers that be were really thinking about that. I think they were thinking, oh, well, we'll lose some viewers, but we'll get some new viewers doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know that the ratings for any of these shows have been significantly different. I know that we were replaced by a game show. You know, it's just the bottom line economics. It's a lot cheaper to shoot a game show than it is to shoot a soap opera. But I do feel it's left a huge void in many people's lives, and you know, the idea that that would be replaced by some other form of something, you know, another reality show or whatever, is just ridiculous. Of course it wouldn't.
Yeah. You know, and I was talking to Pam before we aired, and I told her, I said, you know, I know you didn't necessarily watch CBS Daytime, but I can tell you, and of all the soaps out there, I felt like, you know, Josh and Reva were, of all mainstream couples, I mean, they were the biggest couple in Daytime, I felt like, too. probably next to Luke and Laura, I mean, because it was just, you and Kim Zimmer played your roles to the hilt. I mean, it was just, you always knew, no matter what happened between Josh and Reva, they would always come back together. And, you know, it was just, you just knew. I mean,
yeah, and
like,
that time frame that you were talking about earlier, you know, Philip and Beth, the Four Musketeers, I think they called them, Philip,
mm-hmm,
Beth,
mm-hmm.
You know, and that whole time period, you're talking about Doug Marlin and then later Pam Long, Doug who created Joshua, and Pam Long who created Reva. You know, to me, that was really the heyday of the show in my 28-year relationship with that show, those first few years. And I think specifically about the time when we had we were going great guns with Kim Zimmer, Jordan Clark as Billy, Larry Gates as HB, Harold Anthony as Rusty. You know, that whole time period right there, to me, was really the most extraordinary of all of those years. That was really the most extraordinary time to be on the show. Douglas, when Doug Marlin passed away, that whole era of writers passed. That was the end of, to me, just such an amazing time of great, great, great writing. But Pam Long stepped up to the plate and did an amazing job as well. And she, I think, you know, continued forward with the Philip and Beth and Rick and Mindy and all that kind of stuff, too. I mean, that was a great time. That was a great, great time.
And what a great walk down memory lane for the listeners here, because so many people, I'm sure, like myself, can so identify. And one of my favorite storylines, you know, with the Four Musketeer group was the Christmas storyline where Beth was gone and Philip was trying to find her. And Rick and Mindy got into that. And you know, and then you and Reva have had some some amazing storylines. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you what my favorite one is. But the one thing that is the most memorable for me is I don't even know what marriage this was. I remember one of the marriages.
Or divorce.
Well, no, it was definitely a marriage because it involved a wedding. But it was at the height of when I was heavily entrenched in Guiding Light. And I remember it was the wedding where it was outdoors, and she had on, you know, the Victorian-looking dress, and she came riding up, and it was on the water. Oh, it was absolutely gorgeous. And I
remember that shot of her coming across the water in that white dress.
Mm-hmm.
We shot that whole thing in Pennsylvania. That was their first wedding, and I was in a white suit.
Mm-hmm.
I actually still have the tie that I wore with that white suit. And we were getting towards the end of the day, and they really needed this shot of her in the rowboat coming across. And when I look at that shot today, they start, I think, on the water, they pan up to her, and the sun's sparkling all over the place. And it looks to me like it's a kind of shot that would rival anything that you would see in a beautiful feature film, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just hit everything perfectly in that moment, and Kim, of course, hits that big smile and just looks so beautiful, and to me, that's one of the most beautiful, pristine moments that we ever had on that show, was that one shot of her in the rowboat that I think
I
is
agree,
the one that
because,
you're thinking of. Yeah.
Because when I think of Kim Zimmer, that is what comes to mind, that shot,
mm-hmm.
And it's unbelievable, you know, how Guiding Light was able to capture that, and that has, you know, I'm sure that resounds with so many fans, you know, the show. And one of the things I was talking about before we went live was, you know, I really wish, you know, with web series becoming such a popular thing now, that I wish that someone would recreate, would resurrect, per se, Guiding Light as a web series, and bring some of you guys back, because that would be a made, or even just do a made-for-TV movie or something. I mean, where the fans could get that taste, you know, of reliving what they were so in love with back then.
Yeah,
well, you'd
what
have to, I think,
now.
Talk to Procter & Gamble about that.
I
think that, you know, they would be the people you'd have to go through to get that to happen, and I'm not sure that that would ever happen. I don't know. I see
dream.
What you're saying, though. It would be a great thing. You can dream. Sure.
Well, that's right, you know. I mean, I would love to see it happen because, quite frankly, I think that in itself would be, you know, web series, I don't think would be near as much to, it wouldn't be near as expensive to create as, you know, full-time daytime drama. But at the same time, you know, it's based on some of the stuff we do have out there to watch now, not necessarily web, but just on television in general. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would only take one, you know, one of the former soaps being resurrected for it to kind of become a trend. I really think it would. But like you say, you'd have to pull some serious strings to get it to happen. But we'll keep hoping and wishing.
Yeah, they, you know,
the
business part of that is that they own those characters. It's not like, you know, we can just say, hey, let's get Robert and Kim together and start doing this thing.
Yeah,
I mean, we could possibly do something like that. Where we're playing different characters, but in a similar relationship. But it really is, I mean, most of the fans that I talk to about Josh and Reva, it's the history of the two characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, I think, I want to think that Kim and I had a certain kind of chemistry when we worked together on camera. I think that that's true. And even when we, you know, recently did a musical together, I think that that, for the one moment we were together on stage in curtains at a Paper Mill Playhouse in New Jersey, that I think that that chemistry still happens there, you know, between the two of us. We like each other a lot. We trust each other a lot. We work in, I think, very similar ways, always searching for the truth of the moment, trying to keep everything as honest and real as it can possibly be. But to do those to just try to do that as other characters, I don't know. I don't think that that's really the kind of thing that you're talking about. I think it's Guiding Light was so rich in its history, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think about the history of Josh and Reva, even the stuff that we didn't shoot, that we didn't put on the air, that was just so extraordinary, you know, that the most of the fans of the show really understood who Josh and Reva were when they were, you know, 5 years old and 10 years old and 15 years, you know, we didn't shoot all those years,
but
they understood who those two characters were and why they were together and why they were apart, you know, from time to time, you know,
there wouldn't be any drama in soaps if you guys stayed together and were happy all the time, you know, and it's just not
that's
how
always the
work.
Problem with soaps. Once you get those two people together, then now what do you do? You know, keep in mind, Josh was married 9 times.
Oh my gosh!
On the show to 5 different women, he kept remarrying women. He married Olivia once. He married Annie twice. What's the one that Michelle Forbes played? Sonny, he had to marry twice. I kept on having marriages that weren't real, so I had to annul this one and do that one, and then Reba 3 times, and then Cassie once, you know. So 9 marriages, 9 divorces. I always thought, you know, if you're up for like a 2.5, maybe 3-year relationship with a guy, and a good alimony.
Yeah,
Josh is your man.
Josh is the guy. But it's
Wondering, which storyline did you feel was the strangest one between you having a presumed dead Reva cloned and another storyline where you were involved in time travel? Did you just shake your head?
I put into that group too the mind control drug story.
Those
all happened, I think, within the same 2-year period. That was a very bizarre time. In fact, you know, it's interesting to talk about that now because, you know, Paul Rouse just passed away.
Yeah.
And Paul was the executive producer for Guiding Light when the clone story happened. I think he was for time travel as well. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I remember that day when he sat me down in his office, you know, and it was like a Friday, and we hadn't gotten any scripts for the next week. And so everybody was kind of wondering what was going on. You know, I think Kim had some idea of it, but I didn't really know. I certainly didn't anticipate what Paul was going to say to me in the office that day. And he sat there and he told me with his big cigar in his mouth and his kind of gravelly voice, you know, telling me about, yeah, we're going to, Reva, you think Reva's dead, so a doctor comes to you and he tells you he can clone her and you agree to this. And I said, well, so are we going to have like 9 months of waiting for a new Reva to be born and then have a baby Reva? And he said, no, there's also this rapid growth formula. So we're going to grow her from birth to 40 in 6 weeks, and then Kim will take over the role from there, you know. And at that time, I don't think they had anticipated that she would then, you know, OD on the rapid growth formula and die of old age. But I remember sitting there with Paul, and externally I was going, really? Interesting. That sounds very unusual. That's very interesting. And internally going, oh, my God, what the hell are we talking about? This is crazy, you know.
Last night before he went to bed and had this dream of this line, you know, the storyline.
Well, Robert, speaking of Olivia, I think you may want to talk to her about those marriages right now. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Crystal.
Yes.
Is that you?
It is me. I have a cold.
Oh, be still my beating heart.
I know. I always get my little heart just flutters when I hear your voice.
I'll tell the world right now, I'm just in love with Crystal Chappelle, and I always have been. There, I said it. I think Britt knows that, and I think she's okay with it, but, you know.
I'm madly in love with you. I know.
Yeah.
Oh, what happened is Crystal was drooling on my timeline because she saw that you were going to be on, and then I just extended an invite to her, so that's how we got Crystal.
Crystal's totally one of my favorite human beings on the planet, and I don't like many people, but I'm... adore Crystal Chappelle. So.
Oh, bad gotcha.
How are you, sweetheart?
I'm great. I'm doing great. I just miss you. Are you still in L.A.?
I am for a couple more days. You guys don't mind if Crystal and I talk for a minute?
Oh,
right?
No. Go right ahead.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
I have been here for the last 3 months, and I'm getting ready to head back home. This town has worn me down once again, and it's time for me to go back to the East Coast where my heart and soul live, including my wife and son and daughter. So, yeah, I'll be heading out of here on Wednesday.
Okay. Well, we'll be seeing you.
Was that more information than you were looking for?
not at all. I'm going to fly you back out in February, so...
Yeah, we're going to do something together, right? I can't remember. It's the show... This internet thing?
Yeah, we're going to do something for the web.
Something, Venice, that's right.
He's going to come.
We were just talking about that web series.
Well, Crystal promised me a scene with Saran Wrap.
Oh.
That's right. You know what? To keep tradition, we have to be contained in some place where we're... There's soap and water and very little clothing.
I asked her if we were going to have a bedroom scene, and she said, no problem, but you have to play a lesbian.
Yeah.
I said, I can do that. So it's going to be a little bit like the mother in Hairspray.
Yeah.
I'll be, you know, like Harvey Firestone. It'll be kind of that kind of a thing.
No offense to Harvey, but you'll be much prettier.
I would make a pretty woman, I think.
I think you would. There are many dudes who can't. My husband had to cross-dress on Pashers, and I have a picture of him, and he just looked at it and went, oh, my God, I'm an ugly woman. It was heartbreaking to him for some reason.
That's funny.
Well,
would you be a blonde, or would you be a brunette, or a redhead? What's your choice?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
If I were a woman, what color would my hair be?
Yeah.
Are you kidding? You would be so happy he had boobies.
Yeah.
Totally preoccupied.
I'd just be playing with them all day long, right?
That's right.
Okay, so we'll go with, would you be an A cup or a D cup?
Oh, Lord.
I think I'm going to step back from this conversation and let
you
three ladies have it.
When I show up, it's just awesome.
Yeah.
I'm just going to sit in the background here for a minute. You let me know when we're on a topic or we can actually
talk.
talk about in public.
Well, I just wanted to say hi, and I love you.
And, I love you, Crystal.
You, and I'm
miss
proud
you
of
you.
Bye, loves.
Bye-bye, doll.
Thanks for calling in, Crystal.
Thank you, Crystal.
See, that was a great time period, too, for me. I'm not sure the fans were real big on the Josh-Olivia relationship, but I sure like it.
Oh, they're all going crazy in the chat room.
Oh, yeah, they're going crazy, all right.
So I think it's a good thing.
I have gotten to work with some really spectacular actors on Guiding Light and been married to a few of them. So Michelle Forbes, Cynthia Watros, Crystal, and, of course, Kim. I mean, it's just amazing. So I've had a pretty good run of people on that show.
Well, one of the people in the chat room is asking, how did you end up getting your part on Guiding Light?
I was born and raised in Los Angeles and went to Birmingham High School out in San Fernando Valley, took a degree in theater at Cal State Northridge, studied at American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco and the Lee Strasberg Institute out here, did theater, and I thought my only path was going to be theater. And I went off to Michigan, to the Barn Theater in Michigan, and did a season of Summer Stock. Got my equity card there, understudying Tom Wopat in Carousel, by the way.
Oh.
And all that to lead to this, that I finished up my season of Summer Stock in Michigan and decided to go to New York for a few days. I had an agent that worked on both coasts. And he said, no, come out to New York and we'll introduce you to some people out here. So I went and stayed with a friend, spent a few days there, and I went in for an audition with and met Betty Ray, the casting director at that time, who, just wanted, when Betty Ray passed away, that was the end of that whole era of just, mm-hmm. She was a real, just an extraordinary woman, and she did some amazing casting over the years, you know. And I read for her, and she said, come with me. And she picked me up, and she dragged me off through the studio to another office, and there was Douglas Marlin sitting there. And Betty and I read for him. It was a scene between Josh and Morgan sitting at a bar. I don't know that scene ever actually was on the air. I think it was just what they had written for the screen for the audition. It was about 7 or 8 pages long, and she said, can you memorize this and come back tomorrow and screen test? And I said, sure. And came in the next day. There were 5 other actors there, one of whom was Scott Bryce. And Betty kind of hung out with me and sat with me. I remember we sat and played solitaire. Not solitaire. We sat and played Gin Rummy, mm-hmm. Waiting for the screen test to come about. And, we talked about the role and talked about some things. And I screen tested with Jennifer Cook. Bruce Barry was directing the scene. And they called me a few days later and offered me a 3-year contract and hunk of money to move from Los Angeles to New York. And Scott Bryce was cast from that audition on As the World Turns, on the role he played on As the World Turns.
Well, they definitely loved you.
Yeah, Betty was casting both. And I asked Doug Marlin many years later, I said, why'd you cast me? And he said, you were Josh. He said, we saw a bunch of people, and apparently they've been trying to cast that role for several months, and I just happened to walk in at exactly the right moment. Timing in this business is often the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
I walked in at the exact moment where they had run out of time. The character was starting. The character had been written, and it was starting, and they still hadn't cast it, and they had to do it, and that was the moment that I walked in the door, just by sheer good fortune, and they liked what I did, and off I went. I was very skinny. I mean, more so than normal, because I had been doing Summer Stock for several months, and you don't eat, and you're on stage all the time, and I looked a little worn out and emaciated, but they felt that that was the right
guy.
This poor guy
has to eat. Let's get him a paycheck.
Well, and they gave me 6 days. To go home, pack up my life in Los Angeles, where I hadn't been in 4 months, and move to New York, and I did.
Mm.
Yeah, and my first, I couldn't, get an apartment that quickly, and so I rented a room at the Times Square Motor Hotel on 43rd Street and 8th Avenue. And at that time, that whole area was, you know, sex shops and prostitutes and drug dealers, and, you know. And that was how I moved to New York. And I had never, ever watched a traditional soap opera. I did watch Dark Shadows when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Dark Shadows to me was a whole different thing.
Yeah.
But I had never really seen a soap opera. And I had never been on camera. The first time I was ever on camera was for my screen test for Joshua.
Wow.
You were
and I just had to start learning. And I did. I learned from Chris Bruneau and Jerry Verdorn and Tom O'Rourke and Bill Rourke and all kinds of people. I would just watch them and watch them and watch them and see how they did things. Jane Elliott helped me a lot in the first year.
Oh, I love her.
And I just kind of figured out how to do it, you know.
Well, yeah. I am so glad they cast you. Scott Bryce was perfect for the role of Craig Montgomery on As Bourne Turns, and you were perfect for the role of Josh Lewis. No doubt about it. And talking about humble beginnings where you had to live when you first moved to New York, that that really kind of puts a lot of things in perspective, I'm
sure. I finally found a one-bedroom apartment down on down in 10th Street between 2nd and 3rd, which also seemed to have lots of prostitutes around, and paid $5.50 a month for a tiny little apartment that was only a one bedroom because they had put up a they had added a wall to make it appear that there was an actual bedroom over there. And you'd walk right into a kitchen that was made up of this tiny little stove and a tiny little refrigerator and about, you know, 4 inches of counter space. That was what you opened the front door into. And you had to sort of move sideways to close the door in the bathroom.
Oh, my God.
And there were a lot of cockroaches. Remember, lots of cockroaches.
Oh, no.
That was my big, you know, wow, I'm a big soap star now. You know, that's how it started for me.
Well, I'll tell you, I'd rather have the prostitutes than the cockroaches.
Well, I see, you can say that, but if I said that, I'd get in trouble for it.
Yeah.
True.
There was a scene, too, where you had two ladies of the night come to your house in Guiding Light.
What was that?
I said there was a scene I was watching on YouTube where you invited two ladies of the night.
I don't remember that, but there's a lot that I don't remember about that show. People often say to me, hey, and I think this is partially because of YouTube, they'll say, hey, I, you know, do you remember that scene where you blah, blah, blah? And sometimes I'll say, I don't even remember that storyline.
Really?
I don't remember anything about what you're talking about right now.
Oh,
I sort of remember sort of big picture. And there's certain scenes that are, you know, etched in your mind, but I think that that's also because you see them over. And like I was talking about that first wedding with Josh and Riva, or the fountain scene, of course, you know. But we've all seen that scene multiple times, not just when it aired, but it's, you know, it was used in the show.
Well, I happen to be looking at an odd one then, because it says, Guiding Light, Josh Lewis hires working women to talk, and here walk in two ladies of the night, and they're wanting to do other things than to talk. It was funny.
I have no memory of that at all.
That must be an outtake.
I think
he
blacked that one out.
Yeah, I'm actually sitting here, Pam, I'm sitting here racking my brain going down. Because, you know, I mean, there's one thing about Josh Lewis' character, and that is, you know, he was just this good old wholesome Lewis guy. You know, Billy was the drunk of the family. H.B. was the matriarch, you know. And the first time Josh got involved with somebody besides Reeve, I was like, really? Come on, Josh. You know, he's the one that gallivants all over the place, not you. And, you know, but one of the storylines that I found that was most interesting for you was towards the end of the series, and when they cast you as pastor. And I thought that was very, very, that was kind of an interesting twist on your character, you know. But not exactly unexpected, I don't think, either, given the character, you know, that you played for all those years. But it seemed to kind of come full circle for you in a way.
That was an interesting story. It was an interesting challenge for me. I've never been comfortable really mixing my faith with my work on the show. But Ellen came to me and talked to me about it and said, you know, what we're really interested in exploring is sort of the idea that somebody has a religious epiphany of some kind and tries to enter into this world of I don't know what you'd call it, of devotion, I guess, but how his human side continues to work against him. You know, which is, I think, how things are in life. I mean, I didn't have a lot of detailed discussions with writers or producers, but the few times that I would talk with a new head writer or something that came in, you know, I would say a couple things I would say would be, one, you know, don't put me in a box that Josh is just the good guy who always does the right thing all the time. You know, I think we're pretty flawed as human beings, and I think we all do things that we all find ourselves in situations we wish we weren't in, and we think, how did I ever get here? You know, but I think this is the human condition. This is what we do. And so I didn't want Josh to always be the guy who was always doing everything right. And I also said, and I would also say there should be consequences to action. You know, when something does happen, you know, when he's in a relationship he shouldn't be in or something like that, we should see the consequences to that, because in life there are consequences, sometimes forced consequences and sometimes natural consequences. But, you know, this to me is life, and this is how we live it in real life. So don't put him so high up on a pedestal as being the hero or the good guy, or, you know, I want him to fall, and I want him to, you know, experience difficulty and struggle, and you know, be in those situations where you're facing a couple of potential paths to walk down, and you know, you choose the wrong path, or you choose the less healthy path, and then you're trying to find your way back from that. I think that's what we do in life,
and
we learn from that experience, and we move forward,
yeah.
And then we fall backward again, and we move forward again. You know, and that's kind of what I liked about Joshua. I'd never thought of him particularly as a good guy. I just think of him as a guy. That's how I always thought of him.
Yeah, as a normal person. What storyline, or what do you miss most about playing Josh?
I don't know. You know, that's an interesting way you phrase that, because I don't think what I miss is playing Josh. I played a lot of great characters since I left Guiding Light, on stage, on prime time. You know, I've had a lot of great experiences in playing different kinds of roles. And one of the great challenges of long-term soap opera acting is that you're playing the same character for such a long time. But I really do miss the community that we had, that I would, you know, include the fans in. You know, that there was this community of actors and camera people and makeup and hair and sound and producers and directors and writers. And, you know, we all, you know, these people were all a long-term part of my life, and you would, every day there would be, this one's kid graduated from college, this one over here, they just got married, oh, they're going to have a baby, oh, they're going to be twins, oh, they're, you know, we were constantly sharing these real-life events amongst ourselves and celebrating those things, and in some cases mourning those things, you know. I mean, Larry Gates' death was a pretty big thing for me. That was a pretty big turning point in my life when Larry passed away. And that part of it I really miss.
Yeah, your extended family.
I think about right now, the last day of shooting in PPAC. You know, a lot of people there, a lot of people came who weren't necessarily working because they wanted to be there on the last day. But one image that comes to mind is that Grant Alexander, you know, who, you know, he and I have had a friendship all these years, and he's a great guy, a wonderful actor. He had this thing where he had brought several bottles of tequila with him.
Oh, my gosh.
Each time somebody finished a scene, he would be standing there with a shot glass and a lemon and a lime, I think, and salt.
Yeah.
And he'd take your, you know, take your shot of tequila and your lime. And that's the kind of thing I think about, you know, when those are the kind of memories about Guiding Light that really make me smile. The stuff,
right.
A lot of it was stuff that happened off camera.
Yeah.
The stuff that I miss on camera, just working with such extraordinary people. And the thing that I think about a lot is there were so many times when things happened that weren't planned.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't really on the page, you know. And I think Kim and I did a lot of this. And I think that's part of what made it so extraordinary. And not necessarily rewritten dialogue or paraphrased anything, but just moments that were completely and utterly unexpected that would happen, I think, in many ways only in this format, you know, where you're shooting so fast, there's so limited rehearsal, you don't really know how a scene's going to go. And in some of the most heavy emotional scenes that Kim and I shared together, there was no point in rehearsing, really. You just had to dive in and go for it, and you really didn't know where it was going to go. You know, there was no way to rehearse the fountain scene. Let's use that as an example. There was no way to rehearse that scene. You just had to, she had to literally jump in and go for it, you know, and it came out perfectly. And now I do, you know, some work on primetime shows, and boy, you can work on one scene for 5 hours, you know, and you're on take 15, take 20, take 25, and, you know, and still great things can come out of that. But there was something that was sort of like a high wire act about working on daytime that I think is unique to that medium that is truly extraordinary, you know.
Now, I would think that as far as the prime time and the daytime, you know, did you feel at some point in doing prime time that you would pull your hair out because they took so long to do a scene?
Yes. You know, it sounds glamorous because they put you up in this trailer, well, like a third of a trailer, but they put you in a trailer and you got your audience. It's like really cool. But boy, I got to tell you, I get bored out of my head. I mean,
I can imagine.
You know, because they're setting up the shot, and then they take the first master shot, and they send you back to the trailer, then they reset it for other angles, you come out, you do it again, you come out, you do it again. I mean, it just, and, you know, I would be like, God, we'd be, you know, halfway through the show by now, and we haven't even finished one scene. So, yeah, that drives me a little crazy. On the other hand, I really have been embracing the work on stage that I've been doing. And there's been a lot of it, and it's been great. I've really loved it. And I've realized with the stage work, one of the things that I really miss is really rehearsing something.
Right.
Where you have 2 weeks, which doesn't sound like a long time, but 2 weeks to put together Man of La Mancha, for instance, you know. But 2 weeks seems like a long time now, you know, because we did stuff so fast on the soap. But it's nice to, you know, really be able to work through a scene and try it three or four different ways and, you know, find different paths and work with a good director and get, you know, we had some great directors on Guiding Light, but the enemy of soap opera is always time. It's time, and money.
That's the big
basically
one.
Basically the same thing. And you guys probably already know, most of your viewers already know, that by the time we got towards the end of Guiding Light and the last 2 years, when we were shooting in PPAC and in the studio, by that time, they had also done away with rehearsal.
Completely done away with rehearsal.
There was zero rehearsal. You know, you and I would walk onto a set together. The director would say, okay, you're going to be behind the desk. You're going to be over here walking in the door. You're going to come over to here. You guys are going to talk this way. You're going to stand up, leave. You're going to turn into camera, and let's go. Boom. And we'd roll tape, and we'd do the scene.
Well, it's a good thing you guys had good memories. You know, them telling you that last minute, my gosh, that's got to be frightening at times, you know. Oh, am I going to remember? But I think as soap actors especially have great memories because of all the lines they have to learn on a daily basis.
Well, the long term, that becomes a second nature thing, too, because you get to know the characters so well. And, you know, writers begin to write for you, I think, the longer that you're on a show. And there was paraphrasing that went on. You know, there were times when you had to paraphrase your way out of a moment in a scene, and they'd rather have you do that than stop
there
and
saying
do a
nothing.
Retake. Time. It was all time.
Right.
Well, you know, I have to commend you because, you know, I did not realize that was the way things were filmed. There was no rehearsal prior to there at the very end, and that's just a real testament to the cast and how good you were and, you know, how well you knew each other. It really was told the tale, you know, to not know that. It still was believable, and, you know, the average viewer would have never known that. So that is quite incredible.
Well, that makes me feel better. Thank you.
Definitely.
Well, we do have some callers on hold that would like to speak to you. Would you mind taking a few? Okay,
no,
thank
fine.
You. And I do believe that this is Rachel. Rachel, is this you?
Hi, Pam. Hi, how's
yes.
it going?
Okay, Robert, this is our caller from Australia.
Wow. I want
Hi,
to come
Robert.
Visit.
How are you going?
I want to come visit. I was just
oh,
saying
fantastic.
To a friend of mine the other day, I still haven't been to Australia. I need to go to Australia, but I want to go there and, like, work for a few weeks. But I'm fine.
Oh,
how are you?
I'm good, thank you. We would love to have you here anytime you would like to come.
Okay. Well, right after the holidays. Let's make sure we get your home address, and I'll be showing up at your front door right after the holidays.
That would be a dream come true. So, you know.
God, I love your accent. I love
I know,
your accent.
I do
okay.
too. Well, I think you guys have the accent, so, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Rob, it's a great honor to speak with you. Guiding Light has never actually aired in Australia, but I'm a huge
mm-hmm.
soaps fan, and I watch all of the soaps. I mean, we have several of them here, the US ones, we have UK ones, we have our own ones. But I just love watching as much stuff of the US ones that we didn't have online, and that's how I discovered yourself and Kim and this fantastic thing that both of you have. So I just wanted to ask you a quick question about the ending of Guiding Light, and I just wanted to know, first of all, if you can give us some memories of shooting that last scene with Kim at the lighthouse, and also do you think the ending for Josh and Reba and also for yourself and Kim, do you think that it followed all the rites of passage and everything that you wanted it to be? I mean, I think it's just such a beautiful scene, and it's fantastic, like the iconography with the lighthouse and everything. I just would be really interested to get your thoughts on that.
You know, we shot that scene. That actually wasn't the last day of shooting. We had shot
it wasn't,
out of order.
Okay.
And we went down to a beach in New Jersey, and I want to say, I think it was called Sandy Hook, but I'm thinking that's also the name of the place yesterday in Connecticut where all the stuff went down. But so I might be mixing that up. But, you know, we went out there that day, and we knew that we were shooting the very last scene of the show. And there was, you know, there's always sort of odd technical things that go on, and one of them was that car was, you know, an amazing car to climb into for the end, and we had that kid with us. I remember how weird it was that we had Jeffrey's kid with us.
Yeah.
And climbing into the car with this, was there a car seat? I don't remember, was there a car seat in there? But it was like we were all crammed into this little tiny car. So this is the sort of unromantic response to your question, which is it had all the weirdness of taping that was going on. But, you know, I did look at that last show and that last scene, and it did seem like a pretty amazing finish. For Kim and I, the really emotional stuff happened, I think, not necessarily on that day of shooting. I think it was really our last scene that we shot in PPAC, and I can't even tell you what that was. I know it must have aired a couple days before that final show, and it was a scene in front of the cabin, you know.
Okay,
but I don't remember exactly what the scene was. But, you know, the shooting out on the beach, it was like there really was this sense like, wow, there's this huge thing coming to an end that,
yes.
you know, I had put 28 years of my life into, Kim, 26 or whatever she had put into it, and all these people around us, I know a lot of people who were also in that day came out to watch us shoot that final scene, because they knew that this was the end of something pretty huge, you know. Not only
it
the
was,
last scene
yes.
for Josh and Reba, but the final scene for the longest-running show in the history of broadcast, you know.
I know. That's such an honor, though. That's such an amazing thing
yeah.
that you got to do that. It's
yeah,
amazing.
And I know that they were – they really wanted that last word to be always.
Right, yes.
And
no,
if you look at that scene, you'll notice that I actually say something to her after she says always. And that was, that was just how Kim and I worked, where we were often sort of bantering and ad-libbing with each other. And I think she said always, and I think I said something like, well, let's go then, you know, or something like that. And they edited out my voice. Because they really wanted the last word of the show to be always, which I think was wonderfully appropriate. You know, and then we weren't actually in the car for the big long shot that they took, where they pan back and there's the car and the lighthouse. We had left because I think we had to go back into the city to shoot at the broadcast center, at CBS Broadcast Center in Manhattan. So we had left, and they had somebody else get in the car for the long drive away with the big, beautiful shot where they pull away and there's the lighthouse, this car driving off. So it was a perfect day. It was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful day. Kind of like the day we were talking about earlier where we shot that first wedding between the two of them.
Yes.
It just happened to be a perfect day. Happened to be a perfect day, and we got lucky.
Yeah. Well, Rob, it's such an honor to speak with you. It's fantastic. I really wish you the best of luck. I've seen some of your other stage work on YouTube and stuff. I saw you as Daddy Warbucks and Annie and a few things. All I can say is just keep going for it. It's fantastic, and it's great that
Thank you. I
myself would love to see you in Phantom of the Opera playing Phantom. So if that ever happens.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure I could sing that role, but
I
appreciate
that.
That requires a different – that's a tenor. I'm sort of a baritone, but I'll keep it in mind.
Oh, thank you. Okay, well, it was an honor to speak to you, and if you ever come down this way, you've always got someone who can show you around.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. All right, Rob. See you later, Pam. See you.
Take care. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Thanks,
bye.
Rachel.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm glad we did this on the weekend for her so she's not at work. She actually had taken off work one day to call into one of the shows.
Well, she sounds great.
She's
great.
She's wonderful.
Wow, Australia. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, next up we have David, but he's just from plain old New York.
That's okay. Is this a David I know?
No. Hello, Robert.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm doing good, sir. Let me give it to three. You're really missed.
Thank you.
And Josh and Reva were just one of those couples that probably live on for years. So my question is there any storyline that you had the most difficult time with, and how did you overcome it?
You know, I'm going to go back to the cloning storyline. I love that question because, you know, when you say difficult, in my mind, I hear the word challenging. I love being challenged. And I think if you look at, you know, the plays that I've chosen to do since I left the show, if you look at the characters I played in primetime, you know, I love it when I'm challenged in some way. But challenges can be different kinds of things that you can be challenged because you're bored, as I was discussing earlier today with another show. You know, you can be challenged because you feel like the material's above you. If I were to turn around tomorrow to play Richard III, I would be greatly challenged. Yeah, I haven't done Shakespeare in 30 years, but that would be a certain kind of a challenge. The cloning storyline, though, comes to mind because it was a turning point for me. I already described that moment with Paul Rausch in the office, and again, that was like on a Friday, and we were set to shoot the first script of that on Monday or Tuesday, and I remember going home that night and talking to my wife about it, and I was really, really ripped apart. I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know, how I'm going to get through this. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know what it's going to look like, and I really agonized over it for Friday. Saturday night, didn't sleep well. Somehow I woke up Sunday morning totally at peace about it. My wife was like, what's up? And I said, well, I don't know. Somewhere in the night I realized that it's up to me to figure out how I'm going to respond to this. I can't do anything about the fact that they're writing the story. I could march in and say, I'm not doing this, I quit, but I don't want to do that. So I'm going to shoot no matter what. Either way, I'm shooting this story. And I can either choose to hate it and fight it every step of the way and rant and rave about it and be miserable about it, or I can choose to dive in full on and attack this story, you know, and I don't mean attack it in a way of tearing it apart or tearing it down. I mean, I can choose to just go for it 100%, and that's up to me. I can make that choice, and I'm going to make that choice right now. I'm just going to embrace the story and go for it 100%. I'm not responsible for it. I didn't write it. It's not my idea. I'm just the actor who's playing the role. So I'm going to go for this. And they had that wonderful actor. I need to get his name in my head. Peter.
Yeah, I can't
Peter,
think of
Peter, who played the doctor.
Yep, I
remember. The doctor who cloned Reva. Herman? And he and I, you know, met that morning for the first few scenes, and we had this discussion. And he was also like, I don't know what we're doing with the story. I don't know, you know. And we talked about this whole idea of, like, let's just dive in and do it 100% and see how, and, you know, it's just going to be what it is. And we did. And that was really a turning point for me as an actor, even, because, I realized, you know, once I justified the clone storyline in my own head and just went ahead and dove in and did it, I can do anything.
Oh, definitely.
and I think it really frees you up as an actor to just do anything that's thrown at you and go, okay, I can do this and I can make it work and I can find the truth and I can find honesty and I can make this happen. And so that was one of my greatest challenges, but I think it was also one of my most memorable moments in my career of making that turn and just being free to just do the role, play the role, do what's printed on the page, and don't worry about whether the fans are going to like it or not like it. Don't worry about whether it's going to be ridiculed or not. Just go and commit to it 100% and have a good time while you're doing it. Jeez, it's not brain surgery.
Right.
You know, we're not curing cancer here. We're telling a story. So tell the story.
Good answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's inspiring.
Good answer.
Thank you very much for speaking to me.
Sure. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
and
thank
I miss
you,
New York terribly. I'll be back in a few days.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Don and Pam.
Thank you. Take
You're
care.
Welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay. Next up, we have Tracy. And bear with her if she can't breathe, because first of all, she's going to talk to you. Second of all, she's in the middle of doing her wedding preparations. And third, she's buying a house like a crazy woman, all at the same time.
Okay.
So here's Tracy from Florida.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you? Where's your wedding?
My wedding's January 27th.
January 27th. Oh, well, you got a little bit of time.
Yeah. My birthday is December 27th, and then we have another party in the beginning of the year, so it's crazy.
Okay, well, good luck to you.
Thanks, I'm talking to Josh.
See?
That's okay.
I'm so sorry, I was very...
Listen, I just wish for you and your marriage that you do better than Josh did. In his 9 marriages.
Oh my God! I was very, very composed before, and now I'm just losing it. First, I wanted to say I love seeing you in Criminal Minds. It was really nice to see you in a different role, you know, in Prize 5 and everything. That was
Thank
great.
Thank you very much.
Secondly, we heard about, like, you know, you're talking about the most difficult storylines that you had to do. I wanted to know what was your favorite storyline that you did in all those years. Mine, I love seeing the Reva PPD postpartum depression storyline, you know, when she drove off the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you guys really, like, hit that out of the box. It was fantastic. I mean, just watching Josh, you know, search for her, die for her, it was just heartbreaking. And I wanted to know what was your favorite.
That was a good one. That was a good one. And that one was followed by the Josh, the very short-lived Josh Harley relationship.
Josh and Harley, yep.
Yeah. I'm amazed at how many fans say to me, oh, I remember Josh and Harley. Oh, that was such a great. And I'm like, boy, that felt like it was like a heartbeat moment, you know. So compared to the rest of the bulk of the work,
yeah.
That thing, that was so quick. But, yeah, those were great times. I mean, my general answer to that question has really never changed. It's always been what Kim and I always refer to as the cat on the hot tin roof story, which was Josh in the wheelchair.
Yes.
Reva married to HB.
Yes.
I'm thinking about scenes where they made it rain, the scenes where Reva, you know, like got him to walk again by, I guess, basically having sex with him, which is fabulous. But, you know, to me, that whole story, beginning with Josh, you know, finding out that she and HB had gotten married, I think, in Hawaii or something like that, right?
Yep.
And then going and wrapping himself around a tree and paralyzed from the waist down, working with Charita Bauer. We had scenes in the hospital together, you know, having, you know, they really, you know, researched that well. They had people in the hospital that were disabled, you know, so you know, there were always people to talk to on how to play it. And then the whole thing of Josh moving into the house, that was also the time of the fountain scene.
Mm-hmm.
That whole time period to me was just, you know, pristine and perfect. You know, it was just wonderful actors, wonderful writers, and great directing. And, you know, the story was just so, so powerful. And I don't know that I have a particular sort of second story after that, because, and I do think that time that you're talking about, we shot those scenes in Marathon Key,
yep.
Florida, Reva's car driving off the bridge. I do remember, you know, during that time period, there was a real sense of something extraordinary happening. That was also Kim leaving the show.
Yeah.
You know, and we knew it. I remember a woman talking to me a couple years after that show, where I was diving down looking for Reva, and she said she was standing behind the couch, clutching her pillow, crying.
Aww.
You know, and I thought that was the gift of not knowing what's happening, what's going to happen.
Right.
Because by now, or at least in the last 10 years on the show, at least. You know, often the fans do know what's going to happen. You know,
you can go online and look at spoilers.
They would have known
everything.
That Kim was leaving the show. They would have known that was her last episode. And so, but when this woman was describing to me, you know, she had no idea of what was going on with Kim Zimmer's contract or whatever. Mm-hmm. She had no idea of what story had been written. She had no idea of anything that was going on. And I feel like that was an unfortunate loss that's happened with the internet, with, you know, faster communication. It's like that surprise element, you know.
Yeah, right.
And the devastation in that case that went with that particular thing, you know, how could Reva be gone? I feel like that was sort of that's been sort of lost over the last few years. And it was a great moment. I'll tell you that.
I remember.
Now the downside of that was they had me in that water for like 2 or 3 hours. And I had to dive down and grab onto some kind of a plant or something at the bottom of that stretch of water. It was about, I guess, about only about 5 or 6 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
And I go down, count to 10. And then come back up because they wanted me to come up in exactly the same spot because that's where the camera was.
Okay.
And the current was so strong that if I didn't do that, I would come up like, you know, 10 yards downstream. So, and I also remember about shooting that scene, and you can see this on the tape if you go back and look at it. I remember Bruce Barry, our director, was setting the camera for the car to go off the highway, you know, off the end of that thing. And the stunt guy who was working on the car, Bruce said, "Now wait a minute, is the car going to veer left or right at all?" And he said, "Nope, it's going to be completely straight." And he said, well, are you sure? Because I'm setting the camera here and I don't want to miss the shot. I don't want to lose the shot. And he said, no, it's going to be completely straight.
No, it's veered.
And then after a little bit of discussion, the guy finally said, well, if it's going to veer, it's going to veer left. And Bruce was like, okay, well, I'm going to just adjust it a little bit just in case and blah, blah, blah. And, of course, I don't remember if he said left or right, but, of course, when they shot it, and you can see it on the tape, the car veers off, and it was in the opposite direction of the guy had said. And it slams into the side thing and then goes off the bridge. That was also during a time when we had a lot of budget.
As the years went on,
the budget got cut more and more and more and more, and we just couldn't do scenes like that anymore. There was no way that we could. I think the last big thing that we did was we shot in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Is that for the San Cristobal?
I think that was the last big remote that we did. Huh?
Was that for San Cristobal when you guys shot in San Juan?
Yes. That was in San Juan. It was all shot in Puerto Rico. We went twice. Kim and I went down, just the two of us with a camera crew, and we shot the scenes where they're sort of walking along the streets of old San Juan. And then we went back a few weeks later with, I think, 10 or 12 actors, you know, and shot that whole thing of, you know, I remember something about, for some reason, I was breaking into San Cristobal with Kurt McKinney, climbing a wall and darkness and all that stuff. I remember that, but yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for, you know, past 28 years. I mean, I grew up on you. I remember Josh diving in the water. I was like 7, 8 years old at that time.
Wow.
And I'm just sitting there crying like, Reva, Josh, it's Reva, Reva's diving, you know. And it was just... I miss Guiding Light. We don't have shows like this on TV anymore. I mean, I'm a sixth grade, but Guiding Light was always, you know, my number one. Roger and Josh and Billy, Alan, everybody, you guys are so missed.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you saying that. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Now my mom's going to freeze because I got to talk to Josh Lewis. Thank you so much. Thank you for taking my call. Pam, Don,
you're
thanks
welcome.
A lot. This was awesome. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you for calling in.
Anytime. Bye.
Right, bye-bye. One quick question before we let you go, because I know we're at the top of the hour, but I wanted to ask you about your film. Is it Dracano?
Dracano, yes. Dracano. Yes. You have to combine the words dragon and volcano to say it properly.
Okay, I wasn't quite sure.
Yes, I'm saving you all from the dragon apocalypse. So you're welcome.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, yes.
No problem.
And that just happens to come out on the 21st, right?
What did you say?
I said, and that's just so happened going to be coming out on the 21st when we're supposed to have
right.
this apocalypse.
The Mayan calendar thing, yeah.
Yeah.
The dragons will be. It was fun. It was a lot of fun to shoot. It was just one of those odd things that you do as an actor. And, you know, it was a great group. It was the first time I'd ever shot any sci-fi like that, where we had we had green screen or they had built like a big dragon's lair inside of a studio. And, you know, it was great fun to shoot. A lot of great fun people, and I think it's going to be one of those that'll probably, you know, be on Netflix pretty fast and Sci-Fi Channel and all that.
Dedicated soap fan will be buying it, you know that.
Once again, playing a kind of a hard-assed military guy. I don't know. Seems to be what I get cast in these days.
Yeah.
I didn't serve a day. Personally, but having grown up in the Vietnam era, I didn't. I never served, but that seems to be what they think I should be now. So I go in a lot of roles like that now.
As long as you keep working, that's all that matters.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I've been doing fine since Guiding Light ended. I've been just doing
a lot of theater,
a lot of varied fun things, and each experience has been completely different, and I'm thankful for every single one of them, you know.
Oh. Well, we want to thank you from our heart for joining us tonight. I mean, you've made so many people happy, I can't even begin to tell you.
Well, that was easy.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure. I just want to thank you personally for being here with us and just, gosh, letting us hear your voice again. It's been so great. And I know the Guiding Light, I think I can speak for all the Guiding Light fans that this has been a tremendous treat for them, so as well as myself. And we just want to thank you and happy holidays to you and your family.
Thank you, you too. Thanks for having me. It was a great walk down memory lane for me, too. I need that every once in a while, so thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing
with us.
All right.
You have a good weekend.
Thank you, you too.
Thanks.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Well, Don, I have to say, congratulations. You did not once call him Josh.
You know, I am amazed. Some days I amaze myself. Considering, for the listeners out there, Pam and I had this conversation yesterday or in the last couple of days, and I said to her, I said, now, when Robert calls tomorrow, you know, we usually have Skype on open during the show so we can talk if we need to. And I said, please scream at me on Skype if I dare say I call him Josh Lewis once. And she didn't have to. I'm so proud of myself. I'm patting myself on the back right now, Pam. If you're ready, you go.
Me,
I'm so proud of myself.
Now you can have a shot of tequila.
I know. Where's Grant Alexander when you need him? Hey, and by the way, we forgot to tell Josh we had his vodka ready. So, you know.
Oh, no.
but what a wonderful, wonderful hour it has been. And he is right. It was a great trip down memory lane for not only myself, but for all the Guiding Light listeners out there. And, Pam, I know you didn't watch Guiding Light, but I must tell you missed out. I think it's kind of like people that watch General Hospital, you know, that are diehard GH fans and diehard Guiding Light fans. You know, back when Guiding Light was on the air, it was always opposite of when General Hospital was.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, needless to say, it you know, people who watch GH would say, oh, you got to come walk over to the GH side and you won't be back. And we would say the same about Guiding Light. And, you know, I just could never tear myself away from the Spaldings and the Bowers and the Lewis family long enough to even figure out what was going on over at General Hospital. I mean, we had our own hospital. And,
right.
And if memory serves, I think it was Memorial. I could be wrong. I might have my wrong hospital on the wrong side. But anyway, Ed Bower was the doctor. And there was no reason to rhyme why I needed to go to General Hospital to see what was going on. I love, you know, and I've actually watched it. I mean, you know, when Guiding Light went off the air, I checked it out after all these years. But and it's a great soap, and it is what everyone says it is, and more. But yeah, it is sorely missed, and I'm so glad he was able to be with us today. So.
Yeah, not a lot of people are like me where I've watched soaps on ABC and NBC and CBS during commercials. So let's say I was watching All My Children and then Young and the Restless would be on at the same time. So when All My Children went on to a commercial, I'd watch Young and the Restless. When that went on commercial, I went on to All My Children. And then when One Life to Live came on, I would go back and forth between that and Days of Our Lives because they were on at the same time. So this is how I got to be watching so many soaps.
Well,
but I didn't
honestly
figure out how to do that when Guiding Light was still on as the world turned.
I can't even begin to imagine what a terror you would have been if we would have had DVR and if we would have had some of the modern technology of today back then where we could have, you know, I think everybody could have been a fan of all soaps because you could have DVR'd, you know, those that you didn't watch regularly and tune into your regular soaps. I remember there were many days that I would take, you know, VHS, record the CBS soaps. I'd come in from work, and that's what I would do. I'd sit down in the evening and catch up on my soaps for the day because, you know, back then there was no getting online, going to, you know, CBS and looking at the respective soap episodes you missed for the day. It just wasn't unheard of. It was, you know, so if you didn't watch
SoapNet, you know,
yeah,
we didn't have SoapNet then either.
Right. So it, you know, it's, I really hate that the soaps, you know, have wasted away the way they have, and they just, you know, and now we're down to the ones that we do have left. Thank God we still have some to watch, so fans can at least view. And the good thing for the remaining soaps that are still on the air, it has gained some fans that love soaps, you know, of some of these other soaps that are no longer on air, you know, and now finally people who never watched before are getting to see what some of these other soaps are all about. So they've got great storylines, you know. So it's, yeah, The Guiding Light was just, it was iconic. It was iconic, and the characters were iconic. And believe me, if there was any way I could figure out to get them into a web series, I'd do it. I would do it. I mean, you know, yes, the whole Procter & Gamble thing and, you know, them owning the characters. And he had a really good point, and that is if you were to put him and Kim Zimmer on a web series soap together and not cast as Josh and Reba, it would be very hard for viewers to see them as anything but Josh and Reba. Even if they were playing completely different story characters, similar mm-hmm. storyline, it would be real hard for them not to still call them Josh and Reba. So,
well, that's the same thing like when you watch a soap and you watch several soaps, I should say, and one of your characters leaves, let's say, ABC and goes to CBS, mm-hmm. like recently with Angie from All My Children, and she went on to play on Young and the Restless as Harmony. And uh-huh. it was so hard to look at her and hear that name being called. Because that's not her, that's Angie. And then, of course, Jesse, who was her soulmate and her, who she was married to on All My Children for a zillion years, here they're playing on the same soap on Young and the Restless, but they're not together. You know, they're with
yeah.
different people and have different uh-huh. names. And it's just, it's almost mind-boggling because when you want to talk about it, like if you're on Twitter, you want to right away, you know, type out Angie or you want to type Jesse or something, that's not their names. You know,
yeah.
you have to think now, twice before you write it out.
Sometimes I really wonder, you know, I wonder just how much the soap companies, you know, how much the networks is what I'm trying to say, really pay attention to what the viewers want. Because, honest to goodness, I'm a diehard believer that if the fans were allowed to write the soaps and as dedicated as the fans are, none of those soaps would have left there. And I know a lot of it had to do with the production and the economy weighing in on that. But I don't know. The fan base is just so strong that, you know, it would have had just a tremendous impact over and above just the viewership. And Guiding Light is sorely missed, and I don't know what I'll do if Young and the Restless ever goes off air. And, you know, who's to say that it won't? I hope it doesn't. But, you know, as I was saying earlier, there was a time when we had all three networks were all afternoon from 12:30 to 4. You know, all three networks were slam full of soap. You just pick a network and become, you know, tune into which one was your favorite. And you know, you never would have thought there would come a day when the networks would lose specific soaps, and it was really a sad day for daytime drama all around, and it's never been the same since.
Exactly, and we just got to keep watching whether we like a storyline or not,
mm-hmm.
and keep the rest of the four soaps that are on for as long as we can.
Yes, very, very true, very true.
Because I know some people stop watching because of a storyline or because of
yeah.
a character or a couple. And, you know, things always change. That's what it's about. If you stay in the same storyline, who's going to watch that? So
that's
just
true.
Keep watching. It'll come
and,
back.
And, you know, if you've watched soaps for any period of time, then you know that no storyline is going to, you know, it may go on for a little while, but, you know, at some point it's all going to come to an end because it has to end. It has to change. There has to
right.
be new stuff introduced. So, you know, fans will just hang in there, even if they don't like the storyline or they don't like what their favorite character is doing in that moment. Just know that there's always that opportunity that things are going to change, you know. Because
and there's that
right
fast forward button.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, in this day and age, there's a lot of things you can do. You can be real creative when you're watching the soaps.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, I said that in jest, but if you think about it, that is one of the reasons why the soaps have suffered, because of the age of being able to fast forward through the commercials, which the commercials are what
oh, yeah.
carried the soap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was their bread and butter, you know, and people not viewing the commercials, that is really, that really hurt them. And so, you know, it's just the way of the world, you know,
yep.
and
that's
it's an unfortunate thing, but it is what we deal with. So,
yeah.
What do you do?
I know. Well, and to another subject, let's let our listeners know that tomorrow we have Sherry Shatuk at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Most of you will remember her from Young and the Restless, playing Ashley. But she's also, you know, besides that, an actress in general, and she's a producer and she's a writer. She writes many books. And we'll have her on to catch up with her and see what's going on. If you missed any of our previous podcasts or you'd like to listen to this one again, you can always listen to it on Blog Talk. It's also going to be on our website, which is take2radio.com. Our lovely Dawn is our website manager, and she will get that on there shortly for you. You can also listen to it for free on iTunes. Thank you, David. This time I remembered, but I always
like
that reminder.
That's right.
And we hope that you will join us on Twitter at Take Two Radio, the number two, and Dawn is at Dawn Take Two Radio. We hope you have a blessed night. Say a prayer tonight for the lives that were lost yesterday. We still are thinking of them, and our hearts go out to them. We had a special show for them last night, and we paid our respects, and I think we did it pretty well. If you missed it, you might want to listen to it. We did some talking. We said some prayers, some Bible verses, and played some music to go along with it. We're also on Facebook. Yes, Tracy, we are on Facebook, and it would just be Take Two Radio. I'll go ahead and I'll tweet the link out for you, Tracy. And I think that's about it. Anything you wanted to add, Dawn?
No, just want to thank all the listeners for being here tonight and tuning in for our special guest, Robert Newman. I almost said Josh Lewis, but I didn't.
Yeah.
And you know, and just to reiterate what Pam said, you know, we've got Sherry Chatuck tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern. And if you want to call in and speak with her, just dial 718-506-1540. And Monday, we have a great guest from YNR, and we'll let you know tomorrow who that's going to be. So just keep, you know, following us on Twitter. If you're not, please feel free to do so. And keep up with us with all the up-to-the-minute announcements as we put them out there, and also our website. So just again, thank you for being here. We appreciate all of you.
Yes, thank you, everybody. Good night, and God bless.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, Dawn.
Good night, Pam.